are you doing there, citizen lobbyist?
I'm doing good. How are you, Mike?
Great. You sound wonderful. Like you're almost here.
Or not. I'm in Washington, D.C., halfway across, all the way across the country, I guess.
Oh, that's right. And this is a perfect time right there at noon. Tell us, I love talking to people who are often places like that. What's happening?
Yeah.
What's the weather like there? Let's start with that.
Well, it was beautiful when I got here kind of 4 o'clock-ish last night, and then it looked like it rained this morning, but it looks pretty clear and pretty. It's like going backwards in time. It's like fall here. No snow on the ground, and it looks pretty much like a normal fall day. A little chilly, but not bad. So,
well, that's good.
And nice to get out of the freeze zone for a while.
And, of course, if you've been checking at all the weather here, you'll note that we are looking at 40 degrees. This is a day's pause before it gets cold again.
Are you seeing things melt right in front of your eyes?
Oh, yeah. Walking across this morning, literally. The temperature's going to drop. Not too bad. We're going to be looking at 20s and teens, but it'll be good. How long are you going to be there before you come on and back?
So I'll be here until Sunday, and I'm actually out in Maryland. So I just kind of briefly went through the city, but the city looks pretty normal, kind of back to normal. It's amazing after these large events that a big city like this can have that it can just pull it back together and just kind of go on with normal business as normal. So very pretty drive out here. I don't know if anybody's been out to Potomac, but it's just a beautiful part of the country.
Oh, yes.
Some fabulous homes and just a nice little niche area and a lot of sort of a nicer suburb of the D.C. area.
Right. Just a little bit to the north or northwest of the district itself. And yes, I've been there, lived in D.C. for 4 years and very familiar with that aspect of things. But enough of that sort of beginning thing. Before we discuss some of the events that have been happening here in Alaska, have you, in the short time you've been in D.C., picked up anything else related to the political process?
Oh, there's just so much going. I sort of monitored everything coming here. Kudos to Alaska Airlines, has good internet service. I don't know if that's good or bad because you don't get away from it on the airplane. And I was watching Twitter all day and also just kind of watching the news since I got here. So a lot's going on, as everybody knows, around the country. The first 100 days of the new Trump presidency is anything but not exciting. And I think people, I haven't gotten to talk to enough people to see yet how it's all being perceived. I'll be the rest of the week kind of hanging with people that are DCites, so I'll have a little better report on that when I get back, Mike. But
okay.
It's a lot to take in, I guess it's fair to say.
Right, and I'm just looking forward to your return when you share some of that. Well, you have been able to listen into a little bit of what happened here, and I can help to fill in the rest of it.
I started listening. Got part of the assembly meeting when I was traveling to the airport the other night, and then I sort of restarted it, and so I got the first little bit of it. Sound like everybody was there. They had a full quorum.
Yep.
And they had some pretty interesting, just their normal reports. Of course, Mayor Cottle, who doesn't have a report, doesn't have a meeting with his Wasilla Council at the same time that the Palmer does, so they weren't there to report on city, but Mr. Cottle gave a really good report. And then they got into I thought this was fascinating, Mike, the port freight study that they had done.
Right.
The McDowell Group did, the manager brought that forward. And basically he thought it was a good way to not just have a report that sat on the shelf, as you said, but to give them some overview of what's possible next, because they are, of course, looking for some federal aid and state aid and practically aid from anybody that'll give it to them to finish the rail line. It's about 3/4 done. And I guess they needed to know overall, and he needed to be able to tell the assembly, what's possible if we finish this? What's the timeline? And I thought they did a really good job. I thought it was a really interesting, and I'm glad to see they're doing this. It sort of makes me wonder why they didn't do that first. Maybe they would have done it when they were proposing this, but this seems like a much more in-depth thing than I've ever heard them do. They gave some, he kind of broke it down on commodities, because that's what the rail line is all about. That
right.
was the reason that they made it was so that they could transport commodities from the interior. And it is the deepest draft port in Alaska presently. And but he talked about the mining industry. He talked about the Chinese economy and how that affects, you know, all of these other industries that will depend on it. He talked about oil and gas. He talked about forest resources, gravel. And, you know, basically he gave a timeline for all of them, but a lot of it just depends on the world market, which is kind of a crapshoot.
Right.
And he did talk about, you know, some of the nearer developments, you know, some of them that were 10 years out, sort of the Ambler district that has a lot of resources there. They still need a 200-mile road built. And, of course, with the coffers kind of low now to do that sort of thing, is it more than 10 years? He talked about, you know, oil and gas, LNG production, but all of it needs infrastructure. And the infrastructure, that's always been sort of my problem with this whole port idea, even when they started to put the rail up beyond in the road to connect to Big Lake, is that there's no nothing that's planned beyond the port. And then the rail to finish it is now depending on these other things happening. So I thought it was interesting. What do you think, Mike?
Yep. I thought that had a lot of good information. And the question I had about it, and you've done a nice summary of the areas that they've covered, was how to make all of that information available as we move on down the line and the borough has to make some decisions or make some requests in order to make all this happen. Because one of the things that often happens is that a good report like this is done, but memories fade. And being able to refer to it and use it as the talking points for what you're doing becomes critically important. Not just referring to the report in general, but some of the specifics about it, and have people understand that.
Well, I think that is kind of what the manager has been trying to get out of even this assembly and past assemblies, just some good guiding principles. And he did indicate that this would be an important report when he went back to what they think is sort of an optimistic administration, it sounded like, for infrastructure projects, that at least he could show some type of a basis for where they got their talking points that they come together from off this. But I agree with you, Mike. I think I've seen some very good reports come out of the borough, but they just don't get referred to when they get ready to make some pretty important decisions to go back and say, okay, I know we had this report, and what did it tell us? And what is but, you know, coming with some guiding principles where they're going with development and diversification of the economy of Matsu really needs to come next.
Well, and of course, Tuesday night, the assembly, the guidance of Mayor Vern Halter, had a really brief meeting. The meeting itself was pretty short. They were out of there pretty quickly. Go ahead.
The two other things that I listened to was the approval of revenue sharing to go to the community councils, which looked like it's around $13,000 for each community council. This is something that is a pass-through from the state.
Right.
So every true community council, and it's probably important to say at this point, and I'm kind of I expected Barbara Doty to say something, because a lot of her district people just aren't in community councils. But the community councils that are there will benefit from it, and they can. The borough becomes the administrator of the money, but they determine at the council level what they want to do with those funds. So that was good to see. And then
right.
The other thing I thought was really interesting was the next one that I listened to, and the last one was Randall Kawaki bringing forward a resolution, or actually an ordinance, to change borough code to change term limits for assembly members that are presently 3 years, 2 3-year terms, and then termed out to 2 4-year terms and termed out. And, of course, it didn't affect, this legislation wouldn't affect a sitting assembly member, but I thought there was some interesting weigh-ins just about from everybody about that, and it was eventually voted down, which
right.
I think I would have agreed with, because seems to me like what they all said, it needs to have the public to weigh into it. But that was kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was pushed back and with the proviso that we could talk about it, but you're going to have more. This is not a simple thing you want to have happen.
Yeah, and I think the ideas that he came up with, it would be cheaper. I don't think that ever proved out.
No.
And we'd get more voter participation. I don't think that was proven either. So, you know, these are things that they ask. Assembly members can ask the borough staff to draft these ordinances. Nobody has to agree with them. And they put them out there, and they fly them, and they see what happens. And some of them, even Mr. Kawaki said after talking to Member Culligan, I think is who he mentioned, that it probably wasn't the best baked idea, and he didn't even sound like he supported his own ordinance at that point.
Right. But that's okay. Discussion is good.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could come up and go before the voters. They could, when they determine what they want to put in front of the voters for an advisory vote, I think Mr. Sykes said that's possible. They may stick it on the ballot as an advisory vote. Should we do this?
Sure, sure. And the other piece that still is out there, I don't remember it was resolved, there was discussion about replacement for Mr. Gamble as head of emergency services.
So, I didn't hear the rest of the meeting. Was it discussed at all?
I do not believe so, but I have to fully disclose that I was covering two meetings then, so I was back and forth, and we'll talk a little bit about the Palmer City Council meeting, which was happening almost at the same time.
Oh, good.
My discussions with some members of the administration there is that it looks like they were they feel comfortable that there are some internal people that are certainly on an interim basis quite competent. I'm not aware yet if that's going to be a process that's going to take a look outside to find somebody to come in. It's a big job.
Mm.
And what is clear?
Big job.
Yeah, what is clear is that all of those people that are working in the other administrative positions are really stretched. And in particular,
yeah,
there's the normal work that happens. And since I serve on the local Emergency Preparedness Council, I'm very, very aware of all of the work that goes into be ready for one or another of the emergency services to come into action, whether you're fire or whatever. And if something happens, you have a flood, you have fire, et cetera, then it's nonstop, 24/7. And they are not deep in terms of having a lot of people, and the recovery time from some of those things takes a while. So they're working hard, and I can understand how Mr. Gamble finally said, I've done this for a lot of years. Maybe I need to focus on my family or whatever.
Well, I hope that when Mr. Gamble, before he leaves, that they take the time, and I'm not so sure that the assembly shouldn't call him in to talk to him and say, okay, you're leaving. Everybody's on good terms here. Which way should we go? If you had the perfect, golden ball here, which way would you have gone? And get some input before they do decide to, go out and hire somebody else. Because he'd be excellent. He's been with the borough some 27 years, I believe. He's in an excellent position to give him a good overview, at least from his perspective, as first a volunteer and then a fire chief and then the director of the department. And I would hate to see that amount of expertise and longevity just walk out the door without getting any real insight on which way they should go forward. I hope they do that.
Yep. Well, let's switch over to the Palmer City Council meeting. It started, fortunately, an hour later than the Borough Assembly. Mm-hmm. It also was pretty quick. Both of them ran about 2 hours. There were two things that happened in particular at the council, I think, that I can mention. One very interesting one, and many of the listeners and you, Terry, have followed the rehabilitation of a steam locomotive, Engine 557. That's been happening over in Wasilla. Pat Duran has been very much involved with it, and he was there to speak to the issue. He had a proposal. It was an interesting one. Now, this is one of those projects that requires perseverance, because they're rehabbing this original steam locomotive, and we're talking big work. To redo all of these pieces, et cetera. They've been working very closely with the railroad. And originally the thought was if they could get it finished, it could be run on the line down to Girdwood, for example, and back and forth. And it would be an attraction because it's a steam locomotive, et cetera, et cetera. Well, traffic has picked up. There have been a variety of other things happening on the line. And what Pat did was propose to Palmer that they would like to move the work of renovating that engine over here to Palmer. And it had a number of reasons for doing it. One was that you may be familiar with a spur that comes off the line just by the fair that runs over to the airport. And unlike the line that the track that runs from the fairgrounds into Palmer itself, this other line is in pretty good shape. And they were basically saying there's some brush had to be cleared, et cetera. I've walked the line, and I tend to agree with them, yeah. And there's the big deal is that it passes through an area where there's land and or buildings available to do the work for rehabbing the engine. And then what they need to do is to be able to run on a track as they're testing things out. And that part of that would be a way to do it out of the way, not with a lot of other traffic happening, et cetera. And they could do all of that work. And then, if there's more, that instead of going to Girdwood, that the steam engine would then be run between Palmer and essentially the old Matanuska area just south of Palmer. As a tourist attraction.
Oh, so, that sounds like a win-win plan.
Oh, I thought it did. There were some pointed questions, a receptive mode from the city council, but questions about the costs, et cetera, et cetera. And these guys have been doing this thing for a long time, and they've got it down. They have worked all kinds of fundraising activities. You got a committed group of people that are working with it. So at this point, it sounded like this was a positive reception. A lot of details have to be worked out before it would actually happen, et cetera. But it was nice to see this kind of a real proposal that could make things happen to help in a kind of a different way to bring a train back to Palmer. And I thought that was fascinating. There were a lot of people who have been interested in trains in one way or another here in Palmer that were in the audience. And so we'll see how that plays out. The second topic.
Go ahead. That's just great. We should just say that this is just a really good indicator of when a community, particularly people in Palmer, get together and get the right people together, some of the great things that they can do, you know, sort of these public-private partnerships type things. I need some assistance from some governing bodies and, you know, people to work together. But this will be a real big project that will make a lot of people happy if that happens. It being over by the airport makes it easy to get back and forth into town. So that's a win-win. Good news, Mike.
Okay. We'll see how that goes. The other good news, too, if it seemed to be mostly good news coming out of the Palmer City Council meeting, of course, was reports by the city manager on work being done, next steps, and resolving the issues associated with wastewater treatment. And that seems to be on track. It's all rolling along. And the DEC has approved their plan, et cetera. And that's good news because that, again, is one of those things that is not a simple task. It requires a lot of work, a lot of planning, and the Palmer seems to be on its way to having it in total one of the better systems. You know, the water supply system in the city of Palmer has been rehabbed dramatically, and some have said, and I think that with some accuracy, that the city of Palmer has the best infrastructure for water and wastewater treatment. This next last step, where you know the last mile, where all the wastewater goes someplace. Once that's taken care of, Palmer becomes somewhat of a model, not only in Alaska, but in other places, too, for taking the long view and making all this happen. So I think I think what my observation would be that the city manager, in doing that and also reporting on other projects that were happening here, has achieved a balance. He's developing a rapport with the council about responding and giving information that they've asked for in a way that they understand, and that's what I'm seeing happen in any case. Of course, the last thing, you were here before you left to see a little bit of this, of course, involves snow and snow removal. And I think it's safe to say that the city is doing a better job than the city of Anchorage. Anchorage is a much larger, more complicated situation. A lot of difficulties getting all streets done. But here in Palmer, they've been doing a good job. The comment, I think, coming from the city manager was, in the early part of the winter, the snow was pretty light, and we were able to get out there and get everything done very nicely. So we now have raised expectations for doing this. And when you get heavy dumps, it takes a little bit longer to do it. But at the moment, I would say that the city is doing a very, very good job of removing the snow when it was pretty deep.
Well, Mike, we both live downtown, so we really know about snow removal and how it is in the downtown area, at least. I think I've gone back and forth to Anchorage quite a bit during this winter, probably more than I have any winter. And it really has been a challenge to get around in Anchorage. One of the things that Matsu has going for us at Anchorage is really challenged with is snow removal sites, where to put the snow now.
Right.
It's becoming rarer and rarer to have a place to get rid of the snow, and we don't have that problem. We have a lot of land in Matsu, and there's a lot of people. Even if there's no city land to put it on or borough land to put it on, people are more than happy to let their land be used for that purpose and make some money off of it. In Anchorage, they don't have anything except private land to dump it on, it sounds like, and plus the enormous amount of load of traffic just to get, you know, removal equipment out there makes it a challenge. So, yeah, I'm always happy to get back into the valley and be able to get around a lot better. I think there's still some challenges on some roads that maybe were poorly constructed from to begin with, and there has been some pretty bad traffic crashes this year because of them. But I think we, in large, are really fortunate at the city. But they're going to be challenged with their budgets this year. I think they've gotten by the last few years and probably had money in those budgets that they got to roll over for other projects or has helped them get through. I think this year they're going to spend a substantial amount of money just for snow removal. And don't forget, they're going to have some challenges with drainage.
Oh, yes. Yes.
All that goes. And but having back to what you said about Palmer's infrastructure, they had the foresight for many years to keep up with their infrastructure needs and to charge people at that time a little bit more to have the infrastructure that would serve the city. And they're benefiting from it for right now. And I feel really pretty pleased that where I live that I'm able to have those services and happy to pay for them.
Right. Well, we're almost done here. I think it's appropriate since we had this weekend a very unusual event happen, Women's March. You were there before you jetted off to D.C. I was there as well. That was a pretty impressive thing. Any last comment about that?
No, that was just all good. There's nothing but good with that. I think I saw more people at that march than I had at any city celebration we've had all year long. And not just people from Palmer, it was some people all over the valley. Some estimates of upwards to 1,000 people. They were well behaved. It was well organized. It was a totally volunteer, spontaneous effort from a couple of people that thought we should tag on to what was going to become a big event here in Washington, D.C. They handled it well. They planned it well. I think we should all pat ourselves on the back for that and also to just carry on and stay together in what we believe in and use our right to protest what's going on and whatever your cause is in a peaceful manner.
Yep. Okay. Well, have a safe trip back. I'll be looking forward to hearing about all the things you've learned in Washington, D.C. Thank you, citizen lobbyists, for calling in today.
All right. Be safe out there, Mike.
Okay. Take care.